From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, we'll get to the final courses of this year's Spirit in Place Food for Thought Festival. I'll start by checking in with Spirit in Place director Pam Blevins-Hinkle.
I'll talk with Reverend Kevin Armstrong, senior pastor at North United Methodist Church here in Indy, who will be the moderator of this year's Spirit in Place public conversation.
Plus, I'll get to catch up with Heron School of Art and Design's Dean Valerie Eichmeyer. And we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Celebrating its 15th year, this year's Spirit in Place Festival explores a theme that makes us all hungry for more, food for thought. The festival goes on through November 14th, and Travis DiNicola caught up with the festival's director, Pam Blevins-Hinkle, to find out more.
Pam, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks for coming in right now in the middle of Spirit in Place.
Great to be here.
And congratulations on a fantastic weekend already, and another one coming up. Spirit in Place runs through November 14th, so there is still some time to check on some great events, great partnerships, great activities. But give me just a bit of a rundown as far as what's been happening so far. This is your 15th year. This year the theme is Food for Thought. It may be the favorite theme for many, many people. I know it's one of my favorites. How have things been going?
It has been fantastic, and you are right. That theme, Food for Thought, has really struck a nerve in the community. People love it. We all eat. It's the common denominator. Mm-hmm. And the festival this year has just given a really rich variety of ways that people can immerse themselves in that theme. The opening weekend was just stunning. Our three signature events were so much fun. Krista Tibbett interviewed Chef Dan Barber at Congregation Bethel Zedek, and the Midwest premiere of the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra was Saturday night, and I have to tell you, Indianapolis has not seen or heard anything quite like that.
Pam, I'm just going to stop you right there. What was the Vegetable Orchestra, the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra?
It really is.
For those who are thinking, is she really talking about people making music with vegetables?
I am so talking about people making music with vegetables. It is 11 people who, in the afternoon, go to the market and mm-hmm. buy eggplants and carrots and zucchinis and cucumbers and gourds and pumpkins, and they spend the afternoon with their power tools, and they make instruments.
So they bought them locally. These were Indiana vegetables.
They bought them at Saraga. They did. These were Indiana vegetables, and they made all kinds of miraculous instruments and entertained a packed house at the Toby with pieces that ranged from sort of new age and strange and wonderful to a piece I particularly loved called Cabbage Rock and Roll, which was for people playing cabbage leaves, cabbage heads. And it was tremendously entertaining, wonderfully musical, and just something that's never been seen before here. And, you know, that's a great thing about Spirit in Place, is mm-hmm. it gives the opportunity to bring some really unique things to the city.
Well, one of the things that's really great about Spirit in Place, along with bringing, you know, unique groups and artists and speakers into the city, is also the collaborations that take place between so many local organizations. Tell me about some of those, because there's been some just great stuff going on both in the past week and in this coming weekend.
Well, it's really one of the primary values of Spirit in Place. We ask all of our organizations, and there are over 100 different community institutions who partner with one another to make these spectacular programs happen. And the partnerships are always very unique. Sometimes they're between different disciplines. We love that when mm-hmm. that happens. They marry civic ideas with arts and music and culture, or with faith. And it's hard to actually pick one or two as examples,
yeah.
because every program is really spectacular. We've got one coming up on the weekend that was an interesting partnership between poets and communities, where poets went out into four counties and had conversations with the people in those counties about what food means in their life, and then they created poetry based on those stories. So much of Spirit and Place is about accessing the community narrative and bringing to life what's important about this place we call home.
Well, there's so many cool things that are going on with this. And, the theme of food for thought seems like such a natural one, because it is something that certainly unifies all of us. All of us eat. You know, food is tied so much to tradition and faith and culture and our identity. But there have been other great themes with Spirit in Place in the past. To put this in a context, I mean, you've looked at space before. I'm trying to remember some of the other ones.
Sure, we've had themes on exploring imagination, living generously, crossing boundaries, tradition and innovation. And I think one of the things we found about the theme this year is the magic of specificity, if you will. Some of our past themes have been wonderful, but they've been a little bit more abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And the food theme is wonderfully concrete.
Yes, it is.
And we all know what we're talking about within the festival. And there are still so many different ways to explore that topic, to explore the social issues that are important around that topic. I think there's a lot happening in the food movement and our awareness, our social and cultural awareness about food systems and what's happening. And we all have a lot of questions about that. So it allows us to explore some of those more serious questions while also having some fun through things like the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra.
Yeah, how can you beat a vegetable orchestra?
No, you can't.
Yeah, or there was the chicken show.
Yes, indeed. Chicken as art. Yes,
down
at the University
of
Indianapolis.
Great stuff. It does beg the question, though. I mean, Pam, as you're looking at next year, are you thinking there's still so much more we can do with food? Have you thought about continuing it? Or
yes. In fact, we've had so many people tell us that we need to do food again, and
mm-hmm.
it is such a rich and enormous arena for conversation. However, I think that the theme that we've actually chosen
yes.
will allow us to continue some of that dialogue. The theme we have for 2011 is the body.
The body.
The body.
Well, that's pretty specific, too.
It's also specific, and yet is it not also quite open and
mm-hmm.
quite, there's a lot of territory in
mm-hmm.
there, and we're excited about it for a lot of reasons. And one is that we think some of the energy that's been created by talking about food, we can continue those conversations.
Well, you kind of can't have a body without food.
Exactly right, and we can continue a lot of those important conversations, and also talk about issues in our community related to the body, whether it's healthcare reform or the history of Indiana basketball. There's just a lot of conversations we can have around that particular theme.
Now, all of this, of course, makes me hungry for more, and I know that has been an overused metaphor,
yeah,
but
afraid so.
You really can't help it. So, as we're thinking about what is going on right now and what is happening with Spirit in Place the rest of the weekend, there are still some great events that people can get out to Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, Sunday. Briefly, tell me about what is left on the calendar for people to check out.
Sure. There are several really fantastic programs. Sort of in the cultural fair, we have Take a Bite of Indiana History. This is a family-friendly program that's going to be happening down at the Indiana State Museum. There'll be a really neat thing happening at Saraga International Market called Learning About the World at the Grocery Store.
I love that idea.
Isn't that great?
Having an event actually at an international grocery store.
It's fantastic. And
yeah.
If you've been there before, and I know some people haven't been, but when you go up and down these aisles, and there's all this amazing food, and you go, wow, I wonder what I could do with that,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder more about that culture. So they're going to have docents and translators and dancing and performances, so you can really learn about the cultures of the aisle that you're standing in at that program.
That's such a really fun one. I want to let people know again that if you're listening to us on Friday night, that event at Saraga Groceries from 2 to 5 on Saturday. If you're listening to us on Saturday, you can still get there, get a little shopping done, and check out the end of the event.
Absolutely. And the artist who is part of that project, Harold Fletcher, he's an internationally known visual artist who founded what's called a social practice art program at Portland State University.
Mm-hmm.
And he is going to also be talking Saturday night on our 15th annual public conversation when we have a spontaneous dialogue about food and social justice. And he will be joined by Will Allen, who's a fascinating man, CEO of Growing Power in Wisconsin, and also Francis Moore LePay, who authored Diet for a Small Planet. And they're going to have a conversation moderated by Reverend Kevin Armstrong.
In fact, if people stay tuned to Art of the Man the rest of this program, you'll get to hear Sharon Gamble talk with Kevin Armstrong.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that, we're very excited about that program. There are some other really great things happening this weekend. There's an interfaith program at Butler called Bitter and Sweet, which is going to be a tapas-style progressive dinner where the different faith traditions at Butler will respond to the notion of bitter and sweet out of their own traditions, and you'll get to hear stories related to those. And there's also some how-to events, whether that's urban gardening or canning and preservation and freezing. There's a neat program at the State Fairgrounds called We Are What We Eat this weekend as well. So we have a little bit of everything.
Great. Very fun stuff. And, of course, people can go to the Spirit and Place website, which is at spiritandplace.org, to get more information and get the schedule and all that. Pam, are you stuffed? Are you filled? Are you maybe a better question is, have you had a chance to sample something that you've never eaten before during all of this?
I haven't sampled anything new that I haven't that's new to my palate, my literal palate. I've sampled a lot of things that are new to my intellectual palate. One of the great joys of being Spirit and Place director is with a new theme every year, I get to learn about a whole new topic in a whole new way every year, which is really what's so great about the gig I have. So I have learned so much and had a real consciousness raising about my own food choices and thinking differently about my food. Because I was raised out of a box in a can, as many people were in my generation. So I have a new appreciation for what food means in my own life and in the life of the various communities that I am part of.
Travis DiNicola with Pam Blevins-Hinkle, the director of the Spirit and Place Festival. The festival goes on through November 14th, and you can get more information at spiritandplace.org. That's spiritandplace.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Spirit and Place is famous not only for its scores of diverse events all around town, but also for its perennially intriguing public conversation. This year, the conversation will be on Saturday, November 13th, from 7 to 8:30 at Manual High School. The conversation will bring together Will Allen, former professional basketball player and founder and CEO of Growing Power in Milwaukee, Harold Fletcher, internationally known visual artist whose work is inspired by community-supported farms, and Francis Moore Lapp, author of Diet for a Small Planet. Reverend Kevin Armstrong, senior pastor at North United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, will moderate their conversation, and Sharon Gamble invited Reverend Armstrong into our studios to learn about his relationship with food and how he's preparing for the public conversation.
What kind of a relationship do you have with food?
Well, I grew up in a small community where it seemed like everyone had a garden and every kid had a summer job on a farm. So,
really? Where was that?
Down in southern Indiana in Davies County, where I detasseled corn, put up hay, worked in a garden, spent 10 years in 4-H.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a love of the land, but also a realistic perspective that maybe it's not always as romantic as it sometimes seems.
So you, by the time you were eating corn on the cob at the picnic table on a summer evening, you knew how much work went into getting it there.
That's right. And how there are people who get up before the sun and go to bed at the end of the day who have spent all their life and all their day in the dirt and in the fields.
Were you tempted to a career doing that yourself?
I think the first year of detasseling corn took care of that right away.
Do you like to cook?
I do. I used to think that I could cook really well, and then I married my wife and found out what good cooking really was. So we spend a lot of time in the kitchen, and when friends come over, like a lot of us, that's the place that we gather no matter how often we say, well, let's go into the living room. We're still in the kitchen.
Which is a direct connection to the spiritual aspect of food. Something about the hearth, the process of cooking, the nurturing, just draws people to the kitchen.
It really does. And think about how relationships are often created, but sometimes relationships are fragmented at the table. because that's an intimate place. That's where we're not just sharing food, but we're acknowledging at some deep level that we all need to be at this table. And I suspect that's the reason why a lot of novels, a lot of movies have been made around the kitchen table.
Mm. Say more about that. That's an interesting way to frame what's happening at a table. There was, and of course, part of what a number of the Spirit in Place events we'll be exploring is the disconnect, some of the disconnects we've experienced in the last, say, 20 or 30 years when our schedules have become so busy that it's hard to gather a family at a table anymore.
Yeah, it really is. It's a joke in our family that the one thing that I simply will not do is eat in the car, because I think that food was meant to be eaten with other people and around a table. And so when we're traveling across the country, the rest of the family just grins when we pull in somewhere because we know a drive-through is not an option. It means looking at each other. It means listening to each other. It means not grabbing food, but eating together and listening to one another. It's at the table where many of us have had the conversations that shaped our identity. This is what it means to be a part of this family, for better and for worse. But it was the classroom for many of us growing up, the kitchen, the table, the place where we ate.
What were some of the rituals or traditions at your family table growing up?
Well, every Sunday afternoon, it was over to my grandmother's house, who was a school cook and who I never think learned how to cook for fewer than a couple of dozen people. So we could have two servings of the meal, and when we didn't go for the third, Grandma would say, "Well, what's wrong? Don't you like it?"
And I should point out, this being radio, that that you're a slender man. You're very fit, so clearly you transcended that somehow.
Grandma's cooking drove me to running. So, yeah, Thanksgiving and Christmases and birthdays were all celebrated not only in particular tables but with particular recipes. A little-known pie called Bob Andy was a family staple.
What is that?
My wife says it's dumping the spice cabinet into a pie shell and baking it.
She might not be so much of a fan of this pie, I'm guessing.
She's always happy when I bake one and have a chance to eat the whole thing myself.
What else is in it besides the spices?
That's pretty much it. Some people call it a custard pie, but anyone who really knows what a custard pie is would say, no, not quite.
Is Bob Andy a real person or two real people?
In family lore, yes. It was Robert and Andrew who contributed to the recipe. I suspect, like a lot of legends, it might be true.
So when you got old enough to have your own table and create your own traditions, by this point I'm guessing you had received the call to the ministry. Was there any point where you created some intentionality about that, or did you sort of unconsciously continue some traditions from your youth?
Well, I think not only did I continue some traditions, but like all families, began to integrate some new traditions. Those things as a child we say we're never going to do when we grow up become a part of our life, and then they do get modified in some ways by result of everything from people's appetites and dietary restrictions to our work schedules and our geographic location. But I think for many of us where there was a fondness for the table, there's also something that speaks very deeply and very meaningfully to us when we gather around another table and recall those moments.
You know, in some of your sermons, you do draw, perhaps even many, you draw on lessons learned in childhood about, for example, family finance and so forth. Do you find yourself reaching for the symbolism of food often in interpreting a spiritual message?
Well, it's interesting that across the religious tradition, Sharon, mealtime is central. In our scriptures, in our traditions. For Christians, bread and wine were not simply symbols, but they were a part of the meal. Mm-hmm. And so it was very natural to turn to that. The same is true across other religious traditions, where we speak of the number of ways in which people encountered the holy when they ate together, often by surprise, but sometimes by routine, that what happened, what was practiced over and over became such a deeply ingrained part of our identity, we recognize that there was something mysterious and holy just in the very act of sharing a meal.
Mm. It's not, I'm always pleased to remember that the word companion literally means one with whom you share your bread.
Exactly. The Spanish speakers among us have it right. Compañeros, friend, one with whom we break bread.
Somebody who's that important.
Right.
Yeah. When you how did you get nominated to be the moderator for the public conversation? Was this something you sought, or did someone hear you speak and say, oh my gosh, you're the perfect person?
It probably has something to do with the fact that I have attended all 14 previous Spirit and Place conversations, and also that I serve on the board of the Spirit and Place Festival.
Aha, aha. And how are you preparing, as we're having this conversation, the public conversation's a couple of weeks away, how are you preparing for this, or can you prepare?
Well, I think so. Becoming familiar with the participants' lives through what they have written and what others have written about them, and then I'll speak with each of them by phone prior to our conversation, and then we'll have dinner together.
Oh, perfect.
Before we walk on the stage. Doesn't that seem exactly what we ought to be doing for
Absolutely.
Such a festival?
And What is sort of the mental framework you're thinking of as you go in? What do you want attendees to take away from the conversation, and how does that factor into your preparation?
Well, I've been telling people that this public conversation is really limited in interest to people who eat, go to the grocery store, or care about other people being fed. So if all of us share this notion that we have to eat, how is it that some people have made food a vocation?
Hmm.
I'm going to ask early on of our participants, when was the moment? What was the activity? Who was the person that caused you to begin to think about food as a justice issue? And they each have some very compelling stories about what moved that along. Sometimes farming and food can be a rather romantic notion, especially if we live in the city and we're not quite aware of what's involved. So I also want them to talk a little bit about what is this movement of urban gardeners and urban farmers? How did that happen? What do we think is behind that? And is it really possible to make a difference in feeding people around the world with one urban garden after another? What's at work with regard to policy and not just personal practice?
You're absolutely right. For those of us who live in the city, there's kind of this cloudy, romantic, agrarian, dreamy notion out there about, especially, you have, and I hope you think of it as an advantage of having grown up in an area where you actually saw and participated in the growing of food. But a lot of people have never actually had that experience, so they just have this notion that someone out there, out in that part of the state that we drive through, that part of the world that we drive through on the way to another city, is responsible, and we're not sure how that works.
Yeah, and we joke about the fact that our children think chocolate milk come from brown cows.
Right.
But the truth is there are a lot of children in the city who have no idea where that ear of corn comes from or how that tomato came out of the ground. And then many of us grown-ups, as you say, really have a hard time leaping forward from the 6 tomato plants in our backyard to the 600 acres that someone else is cultivating in order to put food on our table.
Do you have personal experience with one of the small farms in city farms?
Well, my wife and I have been a part of one of the cooperative farms here in town. We also have a garden in our backyard. So we're never very far away from the land, even in our own little parcel downtown.
What's your favorite moment in uh, in that experience of a garden?
Ah, well, I'm a Hoosier through and through, Sharon, so it's sweet corn and tomatoes.
Mm.
And when we can finally have that fresh ear of corn along with a plate of sliced tomatoes, there's just something almost religious about that for me.
Sharon Gamble with Reverend Kevin Armstrong, Senior Pastor at North United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, and moderator of the Spirit in Place Public Conversation. The public conversation will take place on Saturday, November 13th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Manual High School, and it's free. For more information, visit spiritandplace.org. That's spiritandplace.org.
Let's see, I've got Joe and Karen and Cassie and Devin and Noah. Oh, Travis, this list is longer than ever this year.
Sharon, what list are
it's
you making?
It's my holiday shopping list. I want to get started early, and I want to get local art for a lot of people on my list.
Well, you got to check that list twice, first
That's
off.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Once is not
right.
enough. But once you check it twice, I think we can have some ideas on that calendar that we call
What do we do
for some things to start shopping
That's
for.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, one thing that you might want to consider going to in the coming weeks is to checking out the Cultivate, a choreographer showcase that Modus Dance Company is putting on down at the White Rabbit Cabaret. White Rabbit, it's a really funky, cool cabaret space down in Fountain Square. They do all types of different shows. This one is featuring quite a large number of different choreographers. You actually get to meet the choreographers and talk with them about their process and their work. And they will all be showing dance pieces down there. In fact, there's, it looks like 8 different pieces featured that night.
Cool.
Again, Cultivate, a choreographer showcase, November 19th and also the 20th at 8 p.m. and the 21st at 2 p.m. at the White Rabbit Cabaret. Get more information at modusdance.com.
Hey, Travis, I know you and I kept running into each other, or almost running into each other, on First Friday last week.
Oh, there was so much going on last
There weekend. Was so much. Did you, I think you went up to Gallery 924, the new art gallery at the Arts Council.
I did.
I
love that space and was really excited to see the IDOTA show.
Yeah, it's a 6th annual IDOTA members exhibit. And, of course, for the first time in this brand new space, you can see that show through Friday, November 26th, the day after Thanksgiving. So, seriously, I was kind of joking about starting early about shopping, but if there's an art lover on your list, you could maybe look at some of the great artworks on display.
Mm-hmm.
Gallery 924 is at, surprise, 924 North Pennsylvania Street in the New Arts Council offices. That's just a stone's throw north of Central Library and a stone's throw and across the street from Datsa Pizza.
You're throwing a lot of stones there, Sharon.
I am throwing a lot of stones. Mm-hmm. None of them through the windows of Gallery 924.
Hey, and you know what? And speaking of Gallery 924, Primary Colors is doing their annual toy show there this year.
I heard that.
And one thing that's going to be really cool, the show opens on December 3rd. Normally, the toy show has only been up for either one night or at the most a weekend, depending on the space that they've moved it to each and every year. But this year, because they're going to be at Gallery 924, they'll have the toys show up through all of December.
Cool.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
All right. Take the kids and kids at heart in your family.
Yeah. They'll be. Hey, speaking of kids, I know you're going to do an interview very soon about the train exhibit at the Isle of Joy.
I am
so jealous you get to do that interview as someone who's quite fond of trains.
I thought of that. I'm like, oh.
So, but there is a second exhibit that is going on now. Now, you may have missed the All Aboard Making Tracks with the Presidential Train exhibit that was at the President Benjamin Harrison home that just closed, but they've got a new exhibit that's opening up November 19th titled Model Trains Make Tracks, and it's part of the holiday decorations for the Harrison home for the holidays, and this exhibit is going to be open through December 30th, and it features HO scale trains, and the scene is supposed to represent the southwest portion of Benjamin Harrison's notable 10,000 mile cross-country train excursion in 1891, and it's sponsored in part by the Indiana Railroad Company. This should be a lot of fun. So there's two train exhibits to see.
Is that enough for you?
Not nearly.
I was going to say, do you set up a train at home?
I do sometimes. I think maybe I will this year.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool. And you'll hear more about jingle rails at the Idlejord soon on our program for more inspiration. I am sure at some point Emily Dickinson, reclusive though she was, may have ridden a train. That's the best segue I can get to.
Nice.
Sorry. Belle of Amherst, William Luce's beautiful, brilliant one-woman show,
biography, autobiography, because the one woman is portraying Emily Dickinson, is on stage through the courtesy of Indianapolis Civic Theater through November 14th at Marion University. So your window is closing fast. You need to go make haste, hop on a train, and get over there and see that very soon. But beautiful, lovely show all about Emily Dickinson's internal life, but also about her family life, her great passionate love affairs. If that's not enough to get you there, I don't know what else.
I'm intrigued.
Belle of Amherst at Indianapolis Civic Theater right now.
It might just pull me away from my trains.
Oh-ho.
Here's a really unique experience that that I encourage people to look into, though it's certainly not something for everyone. It's the Follow the North Star program up at Connor Prairie, and it's taking place again, and it's running now through the 20th of November. Each evening that it runs, the program lasts about an hour and a half. Groups start about every 15 minutes, starting between 6:30 and running through 8:30. And this program is... you actually play the role of a fugitive slave running, traveling on the Underground Railroad, trying to get away, trying to get to freedom. And as part of the program, you're actually chased. And it's quite an intense experience. It's a little scary. As I said, it's not for everyone. It takes place outdoors in all weather conditions. You'll be walking and running at least a mile or so on rough terrain. And emotionally, it's also very intense as well, because you're being treated as a slave. And... but it's really an incredible education experience that you really just can't get any other way than going to Connor Prairie. Certainly worth investigating if it sounds like something you'd be interested in doing. You can get more information at Connor Prairie about this. Again, it's called Follow the North Star, and it goes through November 20th.
Great, immersive education. Hey, you know, I was kind of joking at the beginning of our calendar segment about early shopping, but here's an opportunity next Friday night, that's November 19th, there's a one-night-only holiday show put on by the Stutz Artists Association, and you can shop for everything from paintings and metal sculpture and to wearable art, including clothes and jewelry, cards, custom portraits. Ask if there's an artist whose work you like. I'll bet you could talk him or her into selling you a gift certificate to give to
somebody.
Well, there
you go. That's a great idea.
Yeah, Sean. Yeah. Also available that night, small and just 6x8-inch original one-of-a-kind paintings made by many of the Stutz artists will be available for $100 each.
Stocking stuffers.
Stocking stuffers. And those are fundraisers for Riley Children's Foundation. So just it's win-win-win, but that one-night-only exhibit at the Stutz is Friday, November 19th from 5 to 9.
Very good. Well, Sharon, we will be back with more ideas of things to shop for the holidays, as well as maybe some Thanksgiving ideas next week on that calendar week off.
What will
we
do
with this turkey?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
It has been more than 5 years now that the Heron School of Art and Design moved from its old location at 16th and Pennsylvania to its home on the IUPUI campus. Travis DiNicola got together with Heron's Dean Valerie Eichmeyer to find out where the time has gone.
Congratulations. For so long it seemed like, oh, when are they going to move? When are they going to move? And now it's almost like you've been there forever.
that's a good way to describe it. Actually, it kind of did go that way. It was 35 years of planning and waiting, and then all of a sudden, hurry up and go.
Right.
But
right.
It has been 5.5 years. We moved in June of 2005. And since then, we've started new graduate degree programs. Our enrollment has skyrocketed. We went from 600 students to now over 900 degree-seeking students, plus over 1,000 students who are of IUPUI in the community who are just taking class for elective arts and things like that.
Okay.
So enrollment has grown, international reputation has grown, graduate degree programs have been launched, and we're kind of midway through there. Actually, mm-hmm. we are in our third year of sculpture, printmaking, and furniture design, our fourth year of visual communications, and next year we'll be launching painting and photography and ceramics and art therapy.
Wow. Wow.
Yes, so lots going on.
Yeah, one thing after next. And there's so many different specific projects and programs I want to ask you about. But before I do that, let me just ask you this. I mean, what's been the best thing for you? I mean, looking back on the past 5.5 years of having the Heron School of Art and Design actually on the IUPUI campus. I mean, certainly your building's great, and that's got to be a big part of it. But what else has been just really good about the move?
You're absolutely right. Eskenazi Hall has been a fabulous influence on our students and faculty in terms of what they're able to accomplish within the studio. So facilities are wonderful, and no doubt gets a lot of attention because it's there, it's right in front of you, and it's a fabulous building designed by Jonathan Hess. But beyond that, the national recognition, not only for facilities, but being able to attract internationally known artists as faculty members, so attracting more out-of-state students. Like I said, our graduate programs, we have 35 graduate students that just came in the last couple of years, and they're from 7 different countries, 11 different states. So our ability to attract the best faculty, the best students, we're nationally ranked 43rd out of more than 300 art and design schools nationally. So all of that feeds into a higher presence, both for IUPUI, but certainly here and nationally, and also, I think, a greater respect and understanding from the community of what Heron is and what we do and us as a professional art and design school.
And it does seem as though you really are a significant part of the community, not just the arts community, but the community of Indianapolis. One thing we've talked a lot about on Art of the Matter the past couple months are all the great programs that occur that you're doing in connection with the community, specifically through the Basile Design Center. Kathy Patalik's been on to talk about that. Very briefly, tell me about that. We won't go into that a whole lot since we've talked about that recently.
I could go on forever about that, and that was an idea that we had. The concept really was not too dissimilar from what we've been doing all along, which is trying to present the best professional practice opportunities for students. How do you get them into real-world experiences? They are still students. They're still learning. But how do you connect to make it a win-win for everyone? Mm-hmm. And many of these things were already taking place through a design center that was at the sort of old Heron. But in the new building, once we moved in, Frank Basile, as the community knows very well of Frank and Katrina, he actually named the center. So it's the Basile Center for Art, Design, and Public Life. And what we do is partner with community businesses and corporations, nonprofits, government agencies, and try to match their needs, art and design needs, with that of our students' strengths, and it has to dovetail.
Such a great practical program.
It dovetails with the curriculum, so when they graduate, they're better prepared to go out into the professional world.
And know how to work with clients.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything from conceptualization through developing contracts, and then, of course, delivery.
Yeah. No, that's just a great, great practical program, and certainly benefits the community as well. Something, and another way that people really engage with Heron is through the lectures that you offer, as well as through the gallery shows, and some great gallery shows that I've had the privilege to go see. Tell me a bit about those outreach programs.
Heron has, in Eskenazi Hall, we have 5 different gallery spaces, and they all serve different purposes. We show national, internationally recognized artists, and those shows we typically have about 6 a year, and those are all free and open to the community. With those, we try to coincide lectures either by the artist or a expert in that field to talk about the art that's in the gallery so that there is some understanding about what we're presenting.
Mm-hmm.
And then in some of the other 2 galleries, we have the Marsh Special Projects Gallery and the Basile Gallery, and those are to show graduate student thesis exhibitions, faculty one-person shows, or departmental works. Those are primarily focused on internal exhibits. But the lectures, and you have to watch our website or look for our e-newsletters, and if you're not on that, you need to be on it, because there's many lectures that are just fascinating. We have
one that I think people will be interested in on December 1st, Polly Applebaum, and that is the Jane Fortune Outstanding Woman Visiting Artist Lecture. And it features a very prominent, internationally known artist.
Yeah, that'll be just a great night. And that also coincides with the opening of the sort of end of the semester undergraduate student exhibition.
Yes, right? And everyone should come to that because it's a high energy night throughout the whole building, 170,000 square feet of art. And there's installations, you name it, you're going to find it.
Bursting at the seams with art.
It's a great evening.
Now, Polly Applebaum, tell me a bit about her as far as her work, because she is the lecturer that night for the Jane Fortune lecture.
Well, she doesn't really fit into any specific genre. It's interesting. She does installation work. Her work is paintings, and she, so they're kind of decomposed paintings, and they're just beautiful and rich in color and installations, sort of floral patterns that become installations. She's semi out of the feminist world, and I think she kind of fits into so many different categories that it's hard to pin her into one specific area, but I think she's very engaging.
Great. Now, and again, I mean, that's part of sort of the ongoing work that Heron does with both gallery shows and visiting artist lectures. One thing that you've really grown a lot in the past few years have been the graduate programs.
Right.
Tell me more about that.
Well, the graduate programs are really exciting because that gives us an opportunity to bring very talented, very creative individuals to our community. And hopefully through the Basile Center, we give them opportunities to create roots here. So that we want them to live and like it here and stay here and add to our cultural community. And many of them have, actually. The students who created public art projects last year for the I-70, Catherine, she is, still living and working here, and many of the one of our great furniture design students who graduated last May, he's still here in town. And so if they can develop roots and stay in Indianapolis, I think it's great for our community. But what draws them here, as opposed to maybe some other art and design schools, is that professional practice, is that come to Heron, and we can try to match you up with a commission, public art project, and they get a wonderful experience that gives them an edge on the job market out there. It's really tough, but if you can't get a commission, if you've never had a commission, and we give them those opportunities. So it's very unique in higher education. No other art and design school is doing it like Heron's doing this.
Well, that really allows you to compete with schools in cities that are either larger or perhaps more well known for their arts communities. So
absolutely,
I would imagine. When students are talking to you about coming here for graduate school or undergraduate school, certainly you talk about the great program, but how do you talk about sort of what their experience in Indianapolis is going to be like?
Well, you mentioned before the benefits of being on the IPOI campus. It goes both ways. I mean, we benefit from being on campus as much as campus benefits from Heron being there. And I think we have a wonderful community for collaboration. And I think that's one of the assets that that Indianapolis brings, and certainly Heron, being in an urban center, we're not too big, we're not too small. It's just perfect size, and the spirit of collaboration is really what makes it work.
You mentioned a couple different programs at Heron right now. Is there one that stands out as your strongest or what you're most known for at this point? Or is it possible to say that?
Well, I don't find it possible to say that because I firmly believe that Heron has really stuck to the core essential values of a solid art and design school, that we haven't started sort of art of the day kind of programs where the faculty are very much grounded in that foundation studies. The students start with rigorous programs in color theory, design theory, practical experiences, three-dimensional design, and so that they are it allows them to then move conceptually. So Heron also offers all of the time-based arts, video, and installation, and more ephemeral types of works of art, but the students know how to do things. They know how to make things, and they have an aesthetic. So I think Therefore, we haven't developed programs that are weak. You know, we won't. I don't see the point in that. And even now, I would not be interested in starting a new program if I didn't think we could be the best at it.
Right. Now, you mentioned art therapy. I'm
yes.
curious about how programs like museum studies or art education or art therapy work into the rest of the curriculum at Heron.
The art therapy is very interesting, and I can't wait to get that started. We're partnering with Riley Children's Hospital, where our students in their second year will be doing their practicum experience at Riley under, you know, supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll take their core art classes at Heron, but they'll take a lot of their psychology and
okay.
other courses at IUPUI in the respective departments. But the students will come out with a master's degree and be certified as both mental health practitioners
mm-hmm.
as well as art therapists. So we're giving them a sort of a dual licensure.
That's great.
Which there's only 22
yeah.
in the country, and
mm-hmm.
there's no other program like this in the state of Indiana. So us being on a medical life science campus and having the School of Medicine right there and Riley and
mm-hmm.
you know, we have a
relationship. Oh, it makes an enormous amount of sense.
It's perfect
yeah.
sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah, that's just great. And art education, tell me about that program.
Art education, Cindy Borgman has been a longtime professor at Heron, and she's wonderful. She writes the standards both in the state, and she's also served on national committees to write standards for art education. And they work with all schools in the surrounding counties
mm-hmm.
as well as IPS to place students in this teaching practicums experience. And they have a really great program, master's program and undergraduate program.
One of the cool things about the Heron building, the Eskenazi Hall, is of course the artwork not just inside but outside. There's some great sculptures out there that people get to enjoy. Any plans for anything new coming up soon that
well,
you can talk about? Or?
As you know, the cultural trail will be
mm-hmm.
coming down Blackford Street, right along the eastern border of Heron. So the sculpture garden, which you referred to, will be right on the cultural trail.
That's very
so
great.
I know
yeah.
I'm really excited. So this will be the last part, and if everything goes the way they're projecting, 2011-2012 will
okay.
be the opening of the cultural trail on that segment, which will be between Military Park
mm-hmm.
and Heron. So we're trying to plan a big exhibition for that time period and do a grand opening.
Oh, cool.
We'll help them celebrate that portion.
I'm sure you will. One other thing. I know that that Heron's been real involved with the IUPUI Impact Campaign, which
yes.
is the fundraising campaign.
Yes, they just announced
yeah.
the big $1.25 billion.
So how's that going?
Well, it's you know, Heron has relied heavily on the generosity of others, I should
mm-hmm.
say, because that really does help us be an excellent program that we are. It really is the difference between being a good program and delivering excellence. And so our focus during the campaign will be on student scholarships and fellowships, trying to get our graduate programs and undergraduate programs supported for international travel scholarships, minority scholarships, general scholarships. So that's crucial to get the students, and during this economy, it really does go a long way. The other projects that we have, I don't think I've mentioned, we're doing an expansion onto the Sculpture Ceramics building
oh, wow.
over on Indiana Avenue.
Okay.
So we'll
that's
be,
sort of that secondary building that
yeah,
you guys have
yeah,
with some really cool studios.
It
yeah.
will be not a secondary building. It's
yeah.
going to be great. Sydney and Lois Eskenazi are our lead donors for that project as well, and the Alan Whitehill Clues Charitable Foundation are big supporters,
mm-hmm.
and as well as many other individuals. And that will break ground this spring, and so that's part of the campaign, too.
Great.
We're going to move some graduate studios out there, so it'll be
okay.
more than just sculpture ceramics. It'll be some fine art programs, but we're adding, get this, 60,000 square feet to our existing 28,000 square feet.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Yeah, I've only been in that building a couple times for some tours and stuff, but there's just some great studio and workspace for the students out there.
Well, that was mainly to accommodate the grad programs and the public art initiatives, but the campaign, besides just those couple gifts that I mentioned, the Clues Fund made a very generous matching gift for international travel scholarships. So we've got, you know, our priorities kind of aligned with graduate programs, scholarships, and the big thing that we're trying to accomplish is endowed chairs. Heron does not have a one, so I think we've got some exciting work ahead of us, I suppose.
We certainly do. You know, Valerie, one last thing I want to just talk with you about. As is the case with many deans with art programs, you first were an artist and still are an artist, but once you get into that administrative role, it's often difficult to keep making art. But you were just telling me before we went on the air that you've been painting again. So
yes,
congratulations.
Thank you.
When are we going to get to see your work?
Well, I'm trying to line up a one-person show. I had a few paintings in the faculty show just earlier this summer, and it was exciting. I was a little bit nervous, actually, because I haven't shown them yet. And everybody knows me. Anybody that has known me long enough knows me as a sculptor from, you know, my teaching and years of showing. But the painting was my way of figuring out how to make a balance in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I do carve out time, and I've probably made about 50 paintings in the last 4 or 5 years. But during the campaign and the building and construction, it was all about that, and
sure.
I had to sort of redefine myself afterwards.
Travis DiNicola with the Dean of the Heron School of Art and Design, Valerie Eichmeier. You can get more information about Heron, including upcoming public lectures and gallery shows, at Heron, that's H-E-R-R-O-N, .iupui.edu. Again, heron.iupui.edu. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. I'll chat with the Madam Walker Theater's new Director of Marketing and Programs, Mally Jeffers.
I'll talk with Kathleen Stevens about her new gallery in Carmel's Art and Design District, including an exhibit of photographs all taken with iPhones.
Very cool.
Uh-huh.
I'll get to meet the creative crew behind the new movie, Paradise Recovered. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.